Welcome to the Institute's Leading Edge, a show dedicated to giving automotive professionals the tools and education needed to succeed. The topics we cover are all geared towards running a better business, leading a better life, and ultimately changing the industry for, well, the better. Here's what's coming up.
You know what, though? I wouldn't have had it any other way. I mean, learn as you go. And learn, you know, biggest thing, adapt. I mean, I think about all the things I've had to adapt in this business over 38 years. It's been crazy. You have to do what works for you, what works for your staff, what works for your customer base, you know? So that's what makes us unique, is there's no one way to do things. The trades are coming back, so, you know, it's good things, finally.
Yeah, it sure is.
We need your help. By submitting questions or topics to info@weartheinstitute.com, we can continue to provide relevant content to you, the listener. But for now, what are we waiting for? Let's get into it.
Total Automotive, Thomas Shortino.
How you doing, Tom?
I'm good.
And where are you located at, Thomas?
Buffalo, New York. Actually, in a little suburb just outside of Buffalo.
Nice. I love Buffalo. It's a beautiful, beautiful area. I love flying in and out of there, especially to go see Niagara.
Well, I'm hosting in July, so you can come down and come to, in July.
When in July are you hosting?
I think it's the 10th through the 13th or something like that.
10th through the 13th. Man, I might be able to do that. That would be awesome.
Yeah, come down, catch the falls while you're here.
Oh, yeah. And we're talking about sending my son up to Alaska to work with some friends that own not a fishery, but he's a fishing guide. And he's looking for a deckhand, somebody that can help out. So we're talking about sending him up there for a month or two. That might work perfect.
Oh, that'd be cool.
That would be cool. So, Tom, a question for you. When you got, let's talk about where your shop is today. What does your footprint look like today? What's the snapshot?
You know what? We're in about a 7,500 square foot building. We can fit, get 7 lifts, 2 drive on ramps for alignment truck work. We're doing ADAS calibrations, which is a new adventure for us, but that's starting to build momentum. We're located right on a corner of a very busy intersection. We purchased the building about 8 years ago, and since we've purchased the building, our business has really exploded.
Wow, that's phenomenal. And so your shop, is it... it's lucky you're on the corner of a busy intersection. Are you doing general auto repair, or are you doing fleet auto repair?
We're doing general auto repair. We're pretty heavy into diagnostic programming. We do a considerable amount of programming and work for other shops around us. So it's kind of, our inside joke is all roads lead to Total Automotive. If they can't fix it, they give us a call and send it down here. So, so we do a lot of work for shop to shop type business, which is set us up for the ADAS calibrations, because we already had a lot of relationships built with other shops. So now they're calling us for calibration work. So we're kind of, we've always tried to set ourselves aside. We have a fairly large open area in the middle of the shop. We're set up similar to a dealership. Okay. So it's with calibration sizes, open space is important. So we have that. A lot of shops don't have that type of real estate to do calibrations. So it sets us aside. We found a niche area that we could utilize that area. So it's been good so far. We've been in it about a year, and it's building, you know.
Nice. That's beautiful. And it's also a great location to be at, where all roads lead to Tom.
Exactly. You know, like I said, it's an inside joke between myself and the staff, but, it seems like, you know, other shops will take a repair to a certain point and they can't get past that point. So they bring it to us, and, you know, we're pretty fortunate. So.
That's super cool. And how many technicians do you have working for you right now? How many service advisors filling up that 7,500 square feet?
So I've got 2 service advisors. I've got 3 full-time techs. And then I've got 2 part-time GS techs that fill out 1 GS per day. So I always have a GS tech on. We just recently took one of our bays that's kind of sits all by itself and designed it around fast in, fast out service, GS type maintenance, tires, oil changes, New Year's Day inspections, that type of stuff. So we weren't using the back big shop for that, you know, faster turnaround type stuff.
Right.
And it becomes a feeder now for the back shop, because, you know, they'll do an oil change. They'll find all kinds of maintenance services or other services on the vehicle. And then we just run it around into the other shop for the techs to work on it. So it's become a feeder for the techs.
Gotta love it. Gotta love it. That's super cool. Well, congratulations on the success you're at now. And the future is bright. So I'd love to go back a little bit to talk about when, Tom, did you start tinkering with engines, motors, cars? When did you start?
So my father was a diesel truck mechanic. So it was kind of always in my history. So I always tinkered with him in the driveway back growing up. When I turned 17, 18, when I was getting out of high school and going into college, I was faced with my two loves were automotive or construction. And if you remember back, we're talking 80, mm-hmm. 1980, the construction bust was going on at that point, and there were no jobs. And so my thought pattern was, why would I want to go to school for construction and come out with no jobs? So I changed my direction, went into automotive, and I've never collected a day of unemployment in my entire life. So it's been kind of rewarding for me. I went to our local community college, Erie Community College. They had just started a associates in automotive technology. And I was in the second graduating class out of that community college in 83.
Oh, my word.
Kind of the ironic part is, flash forward 40 years later, I now sit on the advisory board for the automotive college program. Yeah, for the same college. So I'm giving back to the college now 40 years later for what they did for me long time ago.
So that's so cool. And how has that program grown or contracted, or what's been the process you've seen it go through?
Oh, it's grown. Yeah. I mean, literally when I started, there was hardly any equipment in the shop. We had one cutaway chassis that we would work on, and, you know, the teachers would bring in their cars, and, you know, so there was virtually nothing when I went to school there. And now they've got slightly under 200 students going through. They've got co-op programs in the school. They've got a general program that's going through a transformation right now. So it really has grown. They're talking expansion of the building. They're talking about expanding different programs in there. So, you know, in the next 5 years are going to be pretty exciting times in the college locally here, because it's moving.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And when you work with these students, you're on the board. I don't know if you work with them directly or not. Is there any indication of the stickiness of them coming into the automotive industry? Are they all staying in the industry, or do they find that they're busting out and going somewhere else?
You know what? It's a mix, but we are seeing a lot of kids that are using the automotive program as a springboard to get into Moog or engineering or elevator technician, or, you know, a lot of them are moving to other careers. And that's one of the things we talk about on a regular basis. How do we keep these kids engaged in the program to go on? And it's a real problem. It definitely is. But you know what? There's a lot of good kids in the program. You know, I've got my two GS techs are literally right. One I put in the program, and one was an intern that I took out of the program that now is working for me 3 days a week. So, so I'm using it as a recruiting tool also. Not only am I, you know, on the board and giving my ideas and my future to it, but I'm also being able to use it as a recruiting tool. because I'm making the connections with the kids, you know, right at the school.
What if we told you that you could get quality training and education conveniently and without emptying your pockets? Our Gear platform presents great education and resources for automotive shops, courses led by experts inside and outside our industry, a community of like-minded people to engage with, and a resource library at your fingertips. With a monthly membership, you can gain access to every course we have in the library with the ability to watch wherever and whenever you'd like. The right training is more easily accessed than ever before. For help with improving your business, go to weartheinstitute.com and take your first course today.
With 200 students there, I mean, the pool for you to choose from is huge.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what? There's a certain amount of kids that are quality kids that you're going to get the top 10%, you know, are going to, you know, stick in it. You know, one of our biggest pushes right now in the college is to move the program forward and teach the high tech stuff that's coming out, the programming, the electronics, the EVs, you know, all the diagnostic skills. That's where our focus is, to try and, you know, get the program moving forward on those types of things.
Nice. I love that. And I love that we're talking about the education, the college side of things that preps them and helps them get there. Here you are, graduated from high school. You thought maybe construction, switched gears, went into automotive full time. No pun intended there. Switched gears to go automotive. How many years did you turn a wrench, and at what point did you buy or start your first location?
I was way too young. I turned wrenches from, well, probably 1980 until 86. Some of the local chain stores, ended up at a Goodyear store, was my final stop at the chain store route, and basically said I could do it better. And at 23 years old, I was just telling my staff a few minutes ago my story, and I opened up my doors with a $10,000 loan from my parents in 1986.
Oh,
and you know, it was, you know, talk about, you know, operating on a shoestring. You know, it was rough, but you know, it was rewarding because I was able to open up. When the day I opened up, I had $300 in my checking account, and that was enough to buy my first day's parts and let it roll from there. So we made it work. 38 years later, I'm still in business.
Beautiful. So you here you are, you start, you've got a $10,000 note from mom and dad. You've got the first couple of cars that roll in. You're buying the parts for them. Is this a single bay shop, a two bay shop? Are you working out of a storage unit?
No, it was four bays. It was four bays. Four bays, one lift, you know, tire machine, wheel balancer, some, you know, hand tools, a floor jack. I mean, we made it work, you know, but you couldn't do that now. You know, there's no way you could do what I did at 23 years old nowadays.
Yeah. Wow. You know, I do hear of guys going out and starting that, certainly not in a four bay shop. But I do hear young guys that are going out and they're starting the mobile side, or they're starting out of mom and dad's garage, or out of mom and dad's barn, or, you know, on the side of the house. What advice would you give to those people? Like, you, I mean, you started at 23 and you're like saying, dang, dude, I was just way too young. But that also gave you what you have today, that drive, that power, that industry knowledge, information, that, you know, no die experience. What advice would you give to somebody who was starting out in the industry?
You know what? There's a lot of advice. Things that I did wrong. You know what? I thought I could do it by myself. I didn't have the mentors that are around nowadays. There just wasn't mentoring back then. Every shop was competition back then. Now every shop is willing to work with every other shop, and we work together. You know, I wish that was around 25 years ago. It wasn't. But find a mentor, find somebody you're comfortable with, take advice, training. I'm telling you, training. Not so much fixing cars. You know, we're all technicians. We can fix cars, but take the business training. You know, learn about your numbers. You know, numbers matter. But, you know, there's a lot of stuff now available. The internet's a wonderful thing. You can find whatever you need on the internet now. You know, just soak it all in because there's so much information out there. Don't think you can just do it on your own.
Oh, yeah. So true. So when you first started out, I'm guessing that the computer systems weren't really there available. You're probably doing everything by hand. What point did you implement your first point of sale system?
It was probably somewhere around early 90s. As a matter of fact, the program was called ShopKey back then.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it was a DOS-based program. And
yeah, the
you know,
blue screen.
Blue screen. And yeah, I mean, it was, you know, as basic to get it, you know.
Right.
But, you know, when I first started, I didn't think computers were even a thing. I, you know, it was pen and paper, catalog racks, and, you know, and phones. You know, that was how we did business. But yeah, so computers, that's been a big learning curve for me. I mean, you know, I went from not knowing even how to boot up a computer to, you know, now I'm programming them on cars. So, you know, it's been a long learning curve on keeping up with technology.
Yeah. Isn't that super cool?
Yeah. That's- I would, you know what though? I wouldn't have had it any other way. I mean, learn as you go and learn, you know, biggest thing, adapt. I mean, yeah. I think about all the things I've had to adapt in this business over 38 years. It's been crazy.
No, for sure. Oh my goodness. That, just to even look at the car changes that have happened from the 80s to the 90s to the 2000s and the 2010s and the 2020s.
Yeah. Carburetors, half electronic, no computers to computers, you know. You know, half of it didn't work. It was I always tell people it's surprising we were able to get a car to run in the 80s because, you know, they literally barely ran.
Yeah. No, that's so true. That's true. That's funny. So let's look down the road, the future. What does the future hold for Tom and your shop? Total Auto Care?
Total Automotive.
Total Automotive. What is the future for Tom and Total Automotive?
So we're in transition right now. I mean, Chris is my service manager who you met actually at the group meeting. He is the heir apparent to the business. So we are right now in transition. He's taking a larger role. He pretty much handles the day-to-day operations now. I'm still here every day, but he handles it. I do a lot of back-end office work now. And my new role is going to be, you know, slipping into the background and letting the ship, you know, sail out of port. And I'm going to make sure that it gets where it needs to go. But you know, he's doing a great job. And, you know, we're going to move it into his hands more and more over the years.
Oh, that's beautiful. Congratulations. So the process has started. When will the succession plan, when does that end? Where's the date that you finally hand over the keys and say, I'm done?
I don't think we've gotten there yet. You know, that's pretty open-ended. I mean, okay. I'll be 61 next month. So I still got a few years left in me.
Right.
My wife says I'll never retire, but, yeah, you know, it's going to be a slow transition that he takes over more and more and more. You know, and hopefully I'll be able to enjoy some time out of the shop, which is a big change for me.
Yeah, you got to figure out what hobbies you want to start developing, like golfing or fishing or basket weaving. Who knows? I mean,
yep.
Find something.
Yeah, I'll always keep busy. I got stuff to do.
Well, and so we talk about the changes in the automotive industry, where it started, where you were in the 80s and barely keeping cars running, to where half was a computer, half was internal combustion. Now it seems to all be computer driven. What do you see the future of the automotive industry?
You know, it's a weird time right now because there's so many different directions they're trying to go at once. Do I see autonomous? I think we're moving towards that, especially since I'm involved with the ADAS so much. These cars are pretty much driving themselves almost now. The EV side, I don't know that I'm confident that the EV is where everything lies. I mean, my own personal opinion is my opinion is that it's trying to be jammed down the consumer's throats to buy EVs. And I don't think they're adapting to it very well. I think we're into hybrids, I think, are going to be still a big part of it. And I truly think there's technology out there that hasn't even been released yet that's coming down the pipe. So, you know, I think that EV may be a stepping stone to something else.
A stepping stone. So some of the alternative fuels that I've seen is, for example, hydrogen.
Yep, there's hydrogen. There's synthetic gasoline or synthetic fuel.
Okay.
That can take the place of gas. So I see those two things, you know, possibly coming up and sliding in there at some point in time.
Nice.
But I think we're just too early for that. I think they need to get the technology narrowed down a little bit more.
Yep. And no matter where the future of the industry goes, the automotive industry for maintenance, for repairs is strong. Cars are still going to break. They're still going to need attention.
They're still going to have tires. They're still going to have brakes. They're still going to have suspension. They're still going to have electronics on them. So, I mean, we may have to change what we do, but I mean, think about it. I mean, disc brakes were barely around when I started in this business. So, you know, did we adapt to that? Did we adapt to fuel injection? Did we adapt to, you know, computers and programming? I mean, our business, we just adapt. That's how we do it.
Yeah. So that might be the biggest advice for anybody entering the industry is be willing to adapt, be willing to look at the new, be willing to look at change, be willing to look at what's coming next.
You've got to have an open mind. And you know, you if you're a business owner, you have to be a visionary. You have to be able to envision where the future is and not look at 1 year. Look at 5 years. Where do you want to be 5 years from now? You know, that's where my vision, you know, with Chris, with changing over to having, you know, Chris take a larger role. I'm looking 5 years down the road. I'm not looking at next year.
Right. Yeah. What does 5 years down the road look like?
The most crucial interaction our customer has with us is with our service advisors. So why not have it be with someone who's confident and capable? We train hundreds of top-performing advisors utilizing the latest technology, tactics, resources, and training methods. Placing them in a group of their peers, our training keeps them accountable, engaged, and dynamic at the counter. We believe in developing career-oriented advisors so that they have a place they can call home and you don't have to stress anymore about turnover. If you're looking for the next sales training opportunity to provide your advisor with the best possible outcome, experience what it's like to have an institute-trained advisor. Book a discovery call today at weartheinstitute.com. There's a lot of sales training programs out there, so why not choose the right one?
Yeah, there's so much to adapt to, so much change that's happening in the world. Alternative fuels, electric vehicles, still has brakes, still has brake pads, but who knows what's next?
Yep, exactly, exactly. So, you know, and training's a big part of that, you know?
Yeah. Well, speaking of training, so how much training did you get as a technician? And how much training do you give your technicians today? Two-part question there.
So when I first started out, you know, the training route was, you know, go to a 3-hour seminar or something held by a parts supplier. So yeah. We didn't get a lot of training back years ago. We learned a lot on our own. But nowadays, I mean, I encourage my staff to take any training we possibly can. I pay for it. If I can hold something in-house and host other shops, actually the room I'm sitting in right now, we created about a year ago, which is a training room right above my office. And, you know, as far as you know, I encourage my techs to do ASC testing. So they get an incentive to do that. So I encourage them to take testing. We're going to incentivize training in our pay program in the near future. That component has been built into it. So at some point in time, that will kick in where if they get an amount of hours per quarter or per year, they will get a pay incentive to have that training. So we're encouraging training. It's a big component of what my future looks like.
And a lot of automotive industry is a hands-on industry. How do your technicians adapt to the online learning versus the face-to-face learning?
They hate it. they don't like doing online. We're a TechNet shop, so we have the ability to do CTI training, and they really don't utilize it the way they should. It's tough, you know, to have them do it. The technicians, you know, by nature want to touch and feel things and have hands on. And so if I can do a training in house, like when we brought the Autel ADAS system in, we had the trainer come in and spend an entire day with us so that they could set up the machine, you know, go through calibrations, ask questions, move the machine around, get familiar with the equipment. So it made a world of difference. One day of training and they were all able to do, you know, ADAS calibrations. So it makes a huge difference.
Yeah, it does. It does. I agree with you. I think that a lot of our industry is hands-on. We have to have hands-on. That's the way we learn. We're very tactile.
Yep.
So yeah, I totally agree with you there. So with your training room you've got now, how many people can you fit in there? How often are you doing trainings? What does that look like for you?
So it's a room. It can hold about 15 people. So we put some classroom tables up here. And the room doubles as a classroom, a meeting room. We hold our shop meetings up here. It's also a lunchroom for the guys. It's a conference room for me if I need to get away and come up here and be private. So it's a multi-use facility up here. It literally was dead space that was collecting junk. And about a year and a half ago, I came up with the vision of putting the training room up here. We cleaned all the junk out, and within a month there were walls up and it was a room. So it's a great area for the guys to come up here and just get away from the shop for a few minutes.
Yeah. So what does it cost to bring in a trainer for, let's say, an evening training or a day's training, or what do you do? Do you do it for a full weekend training? What does that usually look like?
Well, it all depends on the class. I mean, some classes are even available free. The local General Motors dealership has classes that we host. If I do have to bring a trainer in, it depends on the cost. And if we do that, we'll split the cost up. It'll either be a few shops will sponsor it and send their techs, or you know, we'll come up with a number, 25, 50 bucks, whatever, and have them attend a class. But, every situation is different.
Yeah. 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 Hard to broad brush that. And when you do do training, all of your technicians are in attendance. There's generally breaking down the door to get in, or do you have to force it?
No, you know what? Our guys attend. They know it's a required thing when we do it. So they're required to do it. Other shops, it depends on the topic. Sometimes you'll get a very basic topic, EVAP, let's say. And a lot of the experienced techs are good at it, but there may be some newer techs in the business that need it. So we try to do either, something that's a little more advanced sometimes, and then some basic classes to catch some of the younger guys. So it depends on the topic.
What do you find is the most popular topics for your technicians? What do they request?
Springtime AC seems to be a big one. I mean, we get an AC season and, you know, only a short season early in the year here in Buffalo. So we got to catch at the right time. AC seems to be a big one. Diagnostic is always, you know, one of those things. Electrical always seems to be a popular one. There's nobody that's really good at electrical. You never ever say you're an expert. So, electrical classes always tend to be a good one too.
Nice. Do you find that, in Buffalo, you're still working with the internal combustion engines? There aren't a lot of electric vehicles.
So yeah, we don't see very many EVs. It has not hit. I mean, we see them, but not like if you were in California or some of the larger cities, you know, we're very, very limited. I mean, there's nobody in Buffalo specializing in EV yet. Nobody.
Yeah. Yeah. I know that there's a couple of guys in Minneapolis, Minnesota that are specialized in the EV side of things. And that I find that interesting too, because it's so cold there, but you know, they're able to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, we're not seeing that specialization yet here.
Yeah.
But I mean, even the ADAS, going back to that, I took it when I was researching it, I took a trip to Philadelphia and I visited some shops down there. They were 4 to 5 years ahead of us on ADAS. They had already been doing it several years and it hadn't even been an issue up here yet. So Buffalo tends to be 3 to 5 years behind the curve on some of the trends in the industry. So we always play catch up on that type of stuff.
And is that from a viewpoint that people aren't buying the newer vehicles, so they don't have those newer systems?
A lot of it.
Yeah.
A lot of it, yeah. Yeah, there just wasn't the need up here. And we'll go back to training. I mean, the education, I mean, I do go out and visit other shops. And one of the biggest responses when I walk in the door and say, hey, you know, I'm here to, you know, let you know we do ADAS. And they're like, what's that? You know, we don't see that. And when I start educating them about, you know, yes, you are seeing it. You know, if you do an alignment, you are seeing it. If you take a bumper cover off, some cases you are seeing it. And they're like, oh, we don't have any problem with it. And the thought is they don't have a light come on their dash. They pull the car out. There's no problem.
Right.
Until that car runs into somebody. So it's a lot of education in this area. We just don't have the education, you know, up in this area to teach shops.
Yeah. They don't know what they don't know. And it's,
exactly.
It's lucky that they've got you to be able to come in and say, hey, by the way, this is what we're looking at. And this is why it's important. This is why you need to make sure you bring your cars to us, because we'll calibrate them properly.
Well, and it's even educating not only the shops, but the consumers also.
Yeah. Yeah. Turn back the dial a little bit with me. Tell me about inspection programs. Are you guys using a digital vehicle inspection program?
We are. Yeah. We have the digital inspections built right into our jobs. So our CAN jobs have DVIs built right into them. So if we're doing a maintenance service, which we call our maintenance services total maintenance packages.
Yeah.
You know, it will have, if it's an oil change, it will have a DVI built into it. If it's a brake inspection, it will have a DVI. If it's a diagnostic, it has a DVI. So anytime we put the job code in, it has those things built right into it.
Nice, which makes it quicker and easier for your service advisors as well.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, we use DVIs for not only, you know, advising the customer what they need, but it's also documentation for us. We take pictures. We do videos. We attach TSBs into our work orders. So all of our work orders now, we've gone to attaching PDF electronic files right into the notes fields. All of our diagnostic pre-scans, post-scans, tire reports all get attached via PDF. And so it becomes a great tool for not only a history on the vehicle, but also a cover your ass type program, where if somebody comes back and has a question down the road, we can call up those previous work orders to talk to them.
Yeah. In a world that wants to sue you for anything, it's important to CYA.
Well, it's a shame, but we have to move towards that now.
Yeah. Yeah. And luckily for you, you've got a great system, a great program that not only educates the client, the customer, there is a huge element there that helps to protect you as the business owner.
Well, and I mean, I think COVID, you know, made us adapt, you know, with digital payment. Now we can, you know, text to pay for our work orders. We can transmit full work orders, get approvals right over the text of the work order, so we don't have to pick up the phone. There's so many tools out there now that we can use nowadays.
Oh yeah. It's a convenience. Super convenient.
It is.
Super convenient. At what point in your career did you seek out a mentor, a coach, a trainer, a sounding board? When did you start with training?
This will blow your mind. It'll be a year, April.
Oh, wow. Well, congratulations.
I said I waited way too long.
So to that point, number one, why did you wait so long? What have you found a value of it? What's coming around from it? I have so many questions for you, but start there with the first question is, what was your mindset that you didn't start until April?
I turned 60. So I knew that I wanted to change and start transitioning to Chris, and I knew I wasn't going to do it by myself. So it was kind of a light bulb went off and said, you know, all those excuses I had all those years, didn't have enough money, didn't have any time, was too busy, you know, raising kids, raising family, you know, taking the kids to hockey, you know, all those excuses I used all those years were gone.
Yeah.
So I said, you know what, now's the time. And I'm telling you, it was not easy. The first 3-4 months, John was my coach mentor, and, you know, I had a lot to do. But you know what, now I'm rolling with it. And I'm telling you, it's the best thing I ever did, was get involved with a coach, get involved with the group process. I got nothing bad to say about what has happened to my business in the last 10 months. So yeah, it's all good stuff.
So what have you seen? What has happened since April, since you started with a coaching and training, since you started with a group environment? What have you seen in your business? What are the tangibles that you can say that and that?
So immediately, the first thing John told me was to slow my car count down and start to go with the 300% rule.
Okay.
And he cut my schedule in half of what I was normally scheduling. And I'm telling you, my staff looked at me like I had jumped off the deep end and you know, gone nuts. But, you know, they bought into it. Once the first 6 weeks were done, they bought into it. And in 10 months, I just looked at the numbers this morning. Our average ticket's up 50%.
Wow.
Our car count is down 12%. GP is up about 29%. We are turning some really good numbers. We got a little bit more work to do, but our numbers have gone way up. My staff has seen their pay go up 30%. We changed our pay plan, so they're making 30% more. I paid for new equipment. We just put a new alignment rack in. While I told you, we did the ADAS, and We've added a second service writer. So, you know, everything. And you know what? I'm sitting in an office now instead of turning wrenches, you know. So I've learned how to put the wrenches away. I barely go in my toolbox anymore. So it's a good thing. Everything's good.
Man, that's beautiful. That's gorgeous. Here you went 40 years before you hired a coach and trainer. Now that you've got a coach and trainer, your business is 50% more than what it used to be.
Yep. And you know what? I'm involved with a local business group that we formed. It was actually formed from a vendor 8 years ago. Yeah. And it started out as a couple of shops getting together for breakfast. And I was invited to it about 5 years ago. And we've grown to 15 shops. We get together once a month on a Thursday morning at 6:15 in the morning. We have breakfast. And we talk about, we're not competition. We leave our badges at the door. And we're all work together. And we take, and through this group organization that we formed, we do career fairs together at the college. Nice. We do, we share ideas on everything from management systems to coaching to mentoring to insurance. I mean, you name it, the topics come up and we talk about them. And, you know, we may start with the intention to talk about one topic and it moves to something else. And we spend an hour and a half talking about that topic. So it's been a great experience because we all work together.
And the next thing you know, you guys are ordering lunch because you've been there just chin wagging over all these conversations, all these different topics.
Yeah. I mean, we do shop tours where we'll do it at a restaurant most of the time. But like this past month, I hosted it here. And, you know, everybody got here at 6:15 in the morning and nobody left before 9. So, you know, it's great because you get to see how other shops operate and talk to the employees, talk to everybody together in a shop experience. It's good things.
Oh, it is. That's so cool. You know, I've had the privilege over the last 10 years of visiting shops all across North America. And there's nothing better than going in and visiting these shops, seeing what makes them unique, what makes them special, what makes them different from every other shop that's in North America.
You know, everybody has their own way of running things. There's no one right way to do it.
Oh, yeah. No.
You know,
it's all different.
It is. Everybody has their own way.
And it's beautiful. And they're not wrong.
No. No, you have to do what works for you, what works for your staff, what works for your customer base, you know? So, you know, that's what makes us unique is there's no one way to do things.
Oh man, I love it. So what advice would you give to the shop owner that's been in the business for 10 years, 20 years, 30 years? What advice would you give them going forward?
Don't wait to get help. If you think you're running a good business, just imagine how good it could be if you knew a little bit more. And that's what I thought. I mean, I had a good business. I was able to function every day. My business is twofold better than it was 10 months ago. And if you're willing to put the work in and leave your ego at the door, and come out and do something, you will find results. I mean, that's the biggest thing is, you know, be willing to look with an open mind and move forward because you're going to find out things you didn't even know.
Yeah, because there's things you know you don't know, but how about that whole entire world of things you know don't know that you don't know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Like I said, I'll go back to the cut your schedule in half and everybody thought I was nuts. And now they're saying, holy mackerel, they really worked. So.
Well, congratulations, Tom. You're just an inspiration. You're awesome. Thank you so much for what you're doing in the industry, in the community. You're helping out 200 students in their future. they will have a similar experience to you, that they will never have a day of unemployment in their lives because they have that skill to be able to provide.
Yep. The trades are coming back. So, you know, it's good things, finally.
Yeah, it sure is. Thank you very much, Tom. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Brooke.
That's it for this one. This episode was brought to you by GearForShops.com, the Gearheads Network, and the Institute. For a better business, a better life, and a better industry, visit WeAreTheInstitute.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you in the next one.